What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your one true host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Yes, that's me, the other host. Not the other host, I guess. We have the one true host now.
The one true host.
However, I am informed by Jordan that as of this last week, Ben host made negative progress on the Patreon.
I have heard this
J-Fan out there, we are doing it. We're doing it.
Are you?
We're making progress. You know what? We've been doing so. Last week we did Super Carlin Brothers Spirit Week on Instagram.
Yeah,
which was super duper fun.
It was.
And then this week we've been doing like little meme things on Instagram as well, where like you can do like the this or that, where you have like two lines of things. So we've got a bunch. We're doing like a Super Carlin Brothers this or that, where people can choose like Anna or Elsa or Cap or Iron Man. But then of course we threw in there Jay host and Ben host. And my goodness, if ever there was a thing where people would just not play the game.
Oh, I know.
Everyone, I feel like, circled just both.
Both.
I was like,
A couple people even were like, nice try, guys.
Nice try.
It's like, you think we're really going to tell you?
Yeah, yeah.
Going to play favorites?
Mm-hmm.
It is one of those dangerous things where I feel like, since the very beginning, you and I have never truly been in any form or competition as to wanting to be the preferred host of any kind. Like, I think you and I have always both been absolutely aware of the fact that we both benefit from everybody liking both of us as hosts of our YouTube show.
Yes, yes, like, that's true. Like, we both win. This is a weird fan interaction that we've had over the years on Twitter, occasionally even in person, where someone will inform either of us that we are their favorite.
Right.
And to me, it's a weird thing to hear because of what you just said. Like, we benefit either way.
Right.
Right. Right. So it's always like, I don't know, like, I know you're trying to compliment me in this moment, but at the same time, like, the other person, like, Ben is my brother, so all you're saying is
a little shining star of proud, but then also, like, you're more defensive over the other person.
Right, yeah.
That's not very cool.
Yeah. So, that's a weird one to deal with. That's great. That's cool. I'm not even my favorite, so.
Yeah. Right. right.
Thanks.
Yeah, it is. I know exactly what you're talking about. Because you know that, like, when people come up, it's. I think it's one of those situations where it's absolutely supposed to be spawning from this place of support, but it definitely is, like, so hard to react to. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
But going back to like the beginning of Super Carlin Brothers, there was a pretty resounding difference, I think, between, like, you know, you uploaded on Tuesday and I uploaded on Thursday, and the view count between those two videos was always more telling than any voice that someone could say was.
Like, you think just like less people watch your videos?
Less people watch my videos. Yeah.
But it wasn't. I mean, if it was that, this was still maybe the difference between 300 views or 400 views.
That's absolutely extremely true. It was one of those like early portions of it though, where I think that like so much of me, despite the fact that I was like actively, I was being a YouTuber. Like I was putting more content out than probably lots of people we would run into who would count themselves way more YouTuber than I ever would have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I always sort of had this like wall up against the idea of identifying or like, I don't know. It was not something I was particularly proud of. Like it would be the type of thing where you could know me in my personal life and not know that I do this YouTube channel.
Right.
Like it wasn't something that, I mean, the people who were in our very close orbit would know, because usually it meant that I couldn't do things because I had to make a video 2 to 3 days a week.
Right.
There were plenty of people who, yeah, like I would never bring it up. And I think that it took me a really, really, really long time to embrace the idea of becoming a, you know, like quote unquote creator of sorts, which, by the way, like, I feel like there is just, and tell me if I'm wrong, maybe there is. Is there even a term that the collective people who put content on the internet agree, like, is the term that we could define ourselves by? Like, because there are so many people who hate the term content creator. There's more people who hate the term influencer. I think that is like the bottom of the poll.
Influencer. Mm, whatever. Yeah. I don't like that word myself.
So my, like, a huge portion of my end of the job is communicating with brands and, you know, arranging brand deals and doing things like that. And that's like the everyday jargon for those people. Mm-hmm. Like that, like, you are absolutely frequently, even like on a contract, it will be like influencer, you know? Like,
yeah.
Super Carlin Brothers.
Well, the problem is that it's because the brands and the advertising dictates much of the industry, and they as a entity need a wide casting net to categorize everyone
right.
they're dealing with. And so that's why you get this like lowest common denominator word that everyone hates, like influencer or creator or something. At that rate, I know those aren't the right words, but I don't know what the right one is either. Because I guess like coming up into it, it was, you know, I would have said YouTuber. Like that was
sure.
the thing.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone's so like multi-platform and stuff now, but still largely YouTube is the main thing that we do. But now it seems like that's, I don't know, assigning yourself a little too much one branded, like, I don't know, like you're on one platform.
Right, you know, right,
is that,
yeah.
Is it still accurate?
I don't know. And it's almost one of those terms where like to Google something, you know, obviously just means go look it up.
Right.
Like regardless of which actual platform you're using. So like, is it one of those things where like YouTuber would eventually be, and this doesn't even feel right as I'm saying it out loud, YouTuber would be the term for one who makes content on the internet because...
Right.
Because, of course, one of those platforms would be YouTube, because I don't even think that's true.
Right.
Like, I think at this point in time, with all the various platforms, I mean, you could just as easily, you know, have Instagram be your main platform.
You could have Instagram, you could have TikTok. I don't know how many people are, like, Facebook only. There could be.
Certainly, I would imagine that there are pages, but it does seem harder to press down. But, yeah, like, even in our office, you know, we have the host of the YouTube channel NerdSync, which has, you know, 500,000-plus subscribers. And one of his big, like, stances is, like, he doesn't make content. He is giving you context for a particular, like, scenario or whatever. Like he's trying to deliver information to you by giving you the context of the situation.
Right.
So he actively says, like, you know, he's not a content creator. So it's so weird. It's so weird to think, like, what do you say? Do you still say YouTuber?
I say, this is a whole different thing. If someone were to ask me, I would probably say I'm a professional YouTuber.
Okay.
Is probably what I would give. However, I want to know how you handled this situation. Is that I, in social settings, will basically never bring up what I do. Not because I'm, like, ashamed of it or anything. But I have often found that, well, one, once it is brought up, one, it will dominate the conversation a lot, and I don't like sort of stealing the conversation in that way. And I almost feel like bringing it up is, I don't know, it feels like a brag, even though I'm not trying to do it.
I know, and I've had this exact same thing happen before. I've even had this happen while playing Diablo before.
Oh, really?
Like, where I've been, just recently, you know, like, one of the things that you can do in Diablo is have your character rushed, which is basically have a higher level character come in and defeat all the bosses so that you can move on and get higher experience faster and that type of thing.
I'm so glad I have you to keep me up to speed on everything Diablo 2. In 2020.
All the things Diablo 2, yeah, yeah. But so, like, frequently this takes, like, 20 to 25 minutes or something. Like, it's not, like, a very long thing, but you spend an extended amount of time with this other person in the game. And so, frequently, while you're doing it, because it's so routine for everybody, this is not, like, I wouldn't even think that people would call it cheating, because it's so commonplace. It's, like,
right.
It's common practice.
It's almost, like, it's just, like, the way the game is played.
It's the way the game is played,
you know,
yeah.
No one's going on Battle.net. If you want to beat the game yourself, go to single player.
Yeah, right. there are plenty of other ways to interact with the game in that way. And that's not to say nobody does it that way. But what I'm trying to say is that what I'm doing is not, like, unusual.
Right.
Yeah. But so you spend some amount of time with the people. So frequently you do, or maybe it's just me, strikes up conversations with people, and you sort of just, like, get to know the person who is either doing it for you or you are doing it for. And I have had this happen a couple of times where people, like, you know, I will completely keep it on them the whole time and sort of be like, yeah, like, what do you do? Like, you know, what part of the world are you from? That type of thing. And inevitably they will end up, you know, being like, yeah, like, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm, like, on YouTube. And they're like, oh my God, no way. Like, what's your YouTube channel? And, you know, it's like, you'll tell them. And then almost always there's kind of this, like, 90-second pause, and then they'll come back and go, 2 million subscribers? And, like, then...
Why are you playing Diablo 2 with me?
I know, yeah. And then they totally have this, I don't even know how to describe it. But you're absolutely right. Like, it becomes this thing where it's, like... I think it's such a developing kind of career, especially maybe, like, where we live, where it's, like, a bit more unlikely that you would... I would imagine maybe if you lived in New York City or L.A., it wouldn't be so uncommon for even multiple of your friends to have some type of online presence as part of their various hustles.
I would bet if you were in like Los Angeles or something, you could talk to people who would identify as a professional YouTuber or something, despite it not being their full time. Like they would identify as that thing without it being their full time thing.
Oh, sure. You know what I mean? I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't know. I do have the exact same situation with it though, where I used to shy away from telling people about it because I was like maybe embarrassed and I really didn't want people to go and look it up and watch my videos because I knew that they were, my videos are like, they were cringy to me then.
Right.
It's not like I look back on them and like, oh, what was I thinking? How did I think this was good? And like, I didn't. Like it was cringy then. It's cringy now. It's always been cringy. But yeah, So I'm in that same camp though.
Yeah. Well, I also find, so whenever this sort of thing does come up, you get the same line of questions from everyone, which is like, wait, how do you make money? Wait, how did you get started? Wait, like people can't, like, I think you're right. It's such an emerging sort of profession that people just, they're very curious about it.
They're super curious. And then inevitably the thing that I think many of the interactions that I have like this, especially for people who are maybe like less online savvy people, almost always come to the conclusion immediately like, oh, well, I should start making videos.
Right.
And I'm like, it's like, absolutely, yes. I mean,
do it.
Go for it. But I do think that people who are less familiar with it probably jump to the idea of like, oh, it's that easy.
Right.
Like to just like, just put them on the internet and people will watch them.
I wish.
But what's interesting about it though, like I remember going back to the early days of our YouTube channel and you had formerly had a channel that we've talked about it on here before.
Yeah.
The John Curlin YouTube channel.
That's right.
That I think at the time had maybe 1,000 subscribers or so.
Yeah, like 900,000. Not 900,000.
900 to 1,000?
Yes, 900 to 1,000.
Got it, yes. Got it. But so you had went and plugged the Super Carlin Brothers YouTube channel on there, and I think we picked up like 34 subscribers or something like that.
Something.
We had more subscribers than none, like as of something more than just the channel trailer going up.
Yeah, like we put up the channel trailer. I put up, because, yeah, the John Curlin channel had been dormant for, I don't know, a couple years or something.
Right.
And I put up a video on there saying, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm doing this new thing with my brother. We're going to be uploading a video every day. It's called Super Carlin Brothers. You can go check it out right here. Yeah, and I think we got 30, 40 subscribers, something like that.
Right. So we had like a bit of a jump start, but there was a part of me like in the beginning when you like put like a piece of content up on the internet, it almost seems like if it's a public piece of content, it will somehow get views. And very frequently I always wonder like, who is this person out there who is watching the video that has like 4 views?
Right.
Because someone
found it.
Someone found it somehow.
Well, this was an interesting, it's like a bunch of like mental exercises and routines you have to like learn and internalize when you're starting out on YouTube, I think, which is that like any number of views is views, which is something, but there's always this fear. I remember the very first time I ever uploaded a video, The Faulty Thermometer, back on John Curlin.
So good.
Thank you. It was like super, I was very afraid when I was uploading it that people would see it.
Oh yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Which I think is a really common thing. You're like, oh my God, I just, man, you're making yourself very vulnerable and very open to criticism. This is like, this is me doing a thing where I am trying to be funny. And while I was working on it, it was so fun. And I thought it was funny. And I wrote these jokes and I recorded this thing and I edited it all together. And then I'm going to put it up. And then as soon as you put it up, you're like, man, what if it's not funny at all? What if it's not, what if this is just me looking like an idiot for 7 minutes, you know, and all of my friends are going to see it. But and it's this weird hurdle you have to get over where you're like, okay, I uploaded it. I really hope no one sees that. But then also the point is
for people
to
see it.
You do want people to see it. Like you're like very worried that, or yeah, you're very worried that like everyone's going to see it. And that's a scary thing, but it's also sort of what you want. But then the reverse is also true, where once it's up, you almost assume, or you're afraid that everyone has seen it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, oh my God, it was out there. Like, the whole world has seen it.
Yeah.
Or, like, it's up, everything's revealed. The curtain has been pulled back on me.
Right.
But the thing is, like, that would be great news if everyone had seen it. If everyone had seen your video, great news. You can retire.
Exactly.
You can retire if everyone saw your video.
You can now be proud of it.
Great. Good news. You have 7 billion views. You're amazing.
Yeah, our entire YouTube channel, I think, has 500 million views.
Right.
So
great news. Great news. But this is like the weird things you go through. Like, man, everyone knows that. I said it on the internet, so now everyone knows this about me.
Right.
Like, you assume your entire orbit is aware and beyond. But that's not true.
Right.
Probably.
I think the thing that was most interesting to me about when you uploaded that first video about a thermometer was not that at any point in time I had ever, like, thought that you were not, like, a funny person. Like, I knew that, of course, like, we had been friends as well as brothers for a very long time. And obviously we have all these, like, hilarious memories of doing crazy things together. So it's like, it's not that, like, I wouldn't associate, like, laughter with you, but it was, I did not associate you with the type of person who was, like, writing jokes in a manner that was, like, intending to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was, like, maybe one of the most interesting. It was almost like I got a glimpse of what must be more about you, like, your internal workings and the way that you think that I had, like, never seen before, despite having spent 20 years of my life,
right,
you know, in immediate proximity to you.
Yeah.
So it's very true that I think that you uploaded this first 3-minute video about a thermometer and I got to know you better instantly because of it.
That's very interesting. I think I remember our mom having a very similar reaction to, like she never met me before or something.
Yeah.
And maybe this was just, like, a really freeing moment in my, this was like a turning point of my whole life, maybe.
I think that there's a chance that was happening at this particular stage of your life. I remember you were taking, like, an intro to acting course. Was that before or after the faulty thermometer?
That was after.
That was after. Okay.
That was after.
Okay. That is, like, one of those moments that, to me, you took this, like, this one class that I feel like you really, like, embraced. Like, you weren't going to the class and sort of, like, sitting through the lecture and knowing enough to pass the test. Which, is that how you treated classes anyway? That's how I usually treated classes.
Which is what?
Which was, like, I need to go and learn enough about geology so that I can pass this course. But it was never, like, I was not taking the class and being like, man, this is so cool. I know so much more about minerals and rocks and Mohs hardness scale and things like that. Like, there are bits of information that I retain from taking the course.
Right.
But I was not, like, thirsting for knowledge about the class. Like, it was an obstacle that was in my way that I needed to complete in order to continue going forward on my path.
Right.
And so I guess, like, my point being, like, when you were taking this intro to acting course, it seemed to me like you were, like, going to class and trying to take as much away from it as possible and then put that into the application of the process of then acting for your projects.
Well, a little bit. So as a senior at Virginia Tech, a very popular class choice was just intro to acting, because often you had a lot of free elective space, but you needed to take X number of hours to remain a full-time student or whatever.
Right.
So, but, you know, most of your classes were now your major ones, so you would take easy otherwise classes. And a lot of people recommended, at least to me, intro to acting would be a good one. And because, specifically, it was very fun because mostly it was improv every day.
Okay.
However, what I learned was there are two professors who taught intro to acting, and one of them was very, let's do improv every day, everyone's just taking this class for fun, and the other one was very, this is a serious business, this is how you prepare for auditions, this is what acting is.
Acting.
And that's the one I had.
Oh, nice, okay.
Yeah, but I think my acting teacher did not really, I don't know if she didn't like me very much, I don't think she thought I was taking the class very seriously, and she wanted all of her students to be, like, acting majors, and I was just someone who was taking it, and I don't think she appreciated that sentiment from the student body. But the fact was that I was somewhat taking it to learn more about how to, I don't know, present, like, a character or be on camera or something like that.
Right.
For the sake of YouTube. But I had a very specific one track. I want to get better at YouTube by taking this class about it. And at the time on my John Carlin channel, I had a character that I did called Dr. Joseph Nathan, which I thought was so fun. He was just this buffoon English fake doctor who knew nothing. And Joseph Nathan is, of course, just Jonathan. Yeah.
I totally get it.
You get it. Oh man.
Maybe it's one of those things where it's like not lost on me at all, but I've also known this joke for so long that I know the full application of it. So
right.
Everyone at home is like, wow, it's the most clever thing I've ever heard.
Right. So I remember there was an assignment in the class where you had to like develop a character and just have them like getting ready in the morning. And so this was like, yeah, great. I'm gonna do this guy. I'm gonna use my little YouTube character. But he's such like he's not like a real person.
Right.
You know, no one would be that dumb. Which is sort of the point.
Sure.
That's like the juxtaposition. He's a doctor, but he knows nothing. You cannot rely on him. But so I went in there with that, and she was like, no, this is completely, it wasn't a real enough person for her.
Oh, I see. So, right.
Yeah.
So like that's like sometimes I have no idea whether or not this is real, but like if you're out in the wild, just like out in public, and you see somebody who is like a character study, it's mm-hmm. like you can like look over and be like that person is like a character. Like they have all these like specific things about them where you can just like sit, watch, and absorb and be like, okay, mm-hmm. you know, like now you are that guy from the coffee shop who like, you know, holds his paper down with the mustard or something. Like, you know, like you're taking real characteristics of somebody and then applying them to a character.
Right.
And so that could be like a strange but believable person, but what you were doing was instead like not a believable character.
Right. Like you're supposed to invent a fictional character, right?
Right.
But like you're just someone who's not yourself. But this was like fiction within fiction.
Okay.
You know, it was like I don't know.
You became like a cartoon character. Yeah, it
was
maybe.
Yes. That's a good descriptor of Dr. Joseph Nathan. He was kind of a cartoon character.
Kind of a cartoon character.
And I think that was how I was even described by this professor as a little too cartoony.
Hey, well, you know what?
But you know what? Look at us now.
Look, hey, it's honestly, it's kind of funny that was that teacher's perception of you.
Mm-hmm.
And then my perception of you taking this class as being this sort of like, to me, you know, as an outsider looking at your life, seemed like a somewhat pivotal moment.
Yeah.
And so that's, I don't know, I think it's really funny.
Well, because I did a lot of stuff that year. I think what it came down to was as I was wrapping up college, like I had my major and I knew vaguely that I was sort of going into reporting and what I wanted to do. And I sort of knew like what I really hoped, even though it was very much a pipe dream at the time, was to like try and do YouTube in some way. So all of my electives were sort of like aimed in that direction.
Right.
Yeah. So I took intro to acting. I had like creative writing and creative nonfiction, and I don't know. I took a bunch of writing classes and stuff like that.
So okay, this is kind of interesting because I feel like it leads to a sort of interesting potential question, and that is like one of these like sentiments that I've never really. I don't know that I like really fully embrace, although sometimes when something bad happens, it's like the immediate thing you reach for is this idea of everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
That I have thought about it so many times in all of these moments in my life where I was kind of like really disappointed that something that I wanted to work out didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then I can also go back to those situations and sort of like trace the path going forward and be like, man, if I had gotten that job or if I'd been accepted to that place or if this, that, or the other had happened, if that girl had said yes, you know, then like
yeah.
everything
Who knows?
Would be different.
Who knows?
And
yeah.
that's like one of these things where I've of course become so happy with where my life is at and the people who are in my life and like what my career is like and all these types of things, you know, that I go back and like, so the question I was going to ask you is, it's kind of fascinating because like leaving college, there probably would have been this moment where if you had been hired to go and be a reporter at like a prominent news station,
right,
that would have been like, you know, for the whole family, like the celebration of all celebrations, like
right.
that would have been like,
hooray,
Jay did it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, our dad, we grew up and he was a TV news anchor. It always sort of seemed like your trajectory. It was sort of the thing that you embraced in college. You really went after it, you know, and you like, you're even to the point where you were doing like this YouTube extracurricular activity almost would have seemed more supplemental to that career path,
right?
Like it, maybe some point going down the line of you being a news reporter and growing your career and being this person who could bring a sense of humor to delivering maybe potentially hard-hitting news, it's almost like you could have looked back on it and been like, I think one thing that really helped me was like dipping my toe into that YouTube water a little bit.
Right.
And then that would have been a part of that story.
Right.
And instead, so much of that journalistic approach, I feel like, really prepared you for this path instead.
Yeah, it was almost as if I was doing YouTube to prepare for that, but ultimately all the stuff I was doing in college prepared me more for YouTube.
Right.
Like all the prep work I did for being like a reporter, like, gave me all like the base skills to then transition over to like YouTubing,
right,
a little bit.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's interesting because in school and going to college, like, I really didn't have, I'm envious of people who like know, like, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a marine biologist, whatever. Because I really didn't know. Like, selecting my major was almost like, I remember like pulling the little drop down menu and being like, I guess this one seems
good.
Right? And so, like, you know, I selected marketing and it was kind of like, okay, you know, that's a business class. It seems like it would leave options available.
Right.
You know, like, I'm not going to like have a very specific field I have to go work in. I can probably go do something businessy.
Right.
And then as my business courses kind of continued and stuff, I got like a bit better and I sort of embraced it a little bit more. And I took on like a double major and did like some entrepreneurial management thing. And, but even still, like, while I was in college, I was not really thinking like, I'm going to leave school and I'm going to run my own business.
Right.
You know, like, I applied to work for Living Social, which I think is kind of like a Groupon type of...
Oh, right. Yes. You know, you're like a sales rep for Living Social.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they came and they talked to one of our, you know, head recruiters come and talk to one of our classes. Right. And it was like, you're going to live in DC and you're going to be part of a cool office with ping pong tables. And, you know, like...
Oh, yeah.
Sort of the whole... what was that movie about working for Google with
the intern,
like, yeah, it's like with Owen Wilson,
Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that whole idea was very prominent at that point in time. Like, you know, the office is going to be cool and we're going to have Nerf gun walls and nacho parties.
We have that anyway.
We do have that in our office. But like, in my mind, that was like my best case scenario. It was like, I'm going to go live in Washington, D.C. I'm going to work for this like hip company. And like, that will be the thing that makes me unique to the people who stayed here in small town Virginia.
Yeah, I went to DC.
Yeah. I didn't get the job.
You get the job.
I did not get the job. I remember being really excited and nervous about like the phone interview.
Right.
You know, and I didn't even get a follow up.
Wow.
Like, that was it. Hmm. That was just like my whole thing. And it's interesting to me because I think a lot of people have seen the trajectory following college and, you know, like, I did this aquarium business and then that sort of morphed into the YouTube business, which has, you know, been successful. And then from there we have like a coffee company and we have all these different ventures and lines in the water. And like, when you look at it with my majors in college, it sort of looks like I was like, oh yeah, like, he's the type of person who's going to go and do all these businesses and take risks and, you know, be a, I don't know, innovator of ideas or something.
Right.
And it's like, what I really wanted to do was go and work like for a company that I perceived to be cool because it was the one recruiter that came and talked to my operations management class.
Right.
And there's always been this thing in my mind where it's like, what would have happened if I got that job?
And you moved to DC?
And I moved to DC.
Man.
And like, that had just been...
Probably would have been harder to do Super Carlin Brothers.
Not just harder. I mean, I feel like a huge key to us doing Super Carlin Brothers was the fact that I was going to continue to live in small town Virginia and I was refusing to move back in with mom and dad.
Right.
And it was like, Jay, like, I have found a house for rent. The person is like an aquarium client of mine. So I was able to negotiate a super reasonable rate. We're going to be able to split rent three ways and it's going to be super cheap, you know? And
yep.
I think our rent literally, like, per person was $267, I remember correctly.
It was pretty good. It was pretty solid.
It was, yeah. It was like a, you know, a multi-bedroom house with a backyard.
Yeah.
Not so bad.
Not bad at all.
But your big condition, of course, was that I do Super Carlin Brothers with you. And it was kind of like, okay. Like,
because at the meantime, I too had, you know, graduated and I was not so stringent about moving back in with our parents.
Right.
So I just had a full-time job and was living with mom and dad. So I was just saving lots of money.
Yeah.
Which to me, I was like, this is already like, you know, you My girlfriend, Beth, who is now my wife, you know, did move to DC and she taught there for a year. So it wasn't like, oh man, it'd be really great if I had my own place. So, you know, I could have my girlfriend over all the time and stuff, you know, like that. I had a girlfriend, but she, you know,
she didn't live there.
She didn't live there. So it wasn't really a big deal. It's just right. Like, whatever, may as well save money.
Right, right. You know? Exactly.
But so yeah, I needed some more incentive to leave this situation.
Right.
Yeah, but I will, to talk to your point where people have such a clear mind about what they wanted to do. I remember, because I got hired at this concert venue.
Right.
Here in Roanoke as the marketing coordinator, which, man, it sounded like such a cool position.
Job titles are the most misleading things on the planet.
It's like, now if I hear marketing coordinator, it's just like, that's just entry-level marketing, basically.
Right.
Yeah, that's just what that means. It sounds so impressive.
Right.
Like, coordinator, oh my, wow. But I even think, even this particular job was like very well-suited to YouTube prep.
Yeah.
Because largely what I had to do, or a big part of it, was that I was the Photoshop guy, I guess, which I had very little Photoshop skills when I started.
Right.
But just by necessity, I had to go in there every single day, basically, and either make new little, like, billboards or signs for the marquee outside. And the tip they always gave you was, like, stand back from your computer and, like, or reduce it down to the size of a postage stamp and see if you can still read everything.
Uh-huh.
Because people are driving past these billboards or signs at 50, 60 miles an hour. It's going to be there for 2 seconds. So
you got to be able to, like,
they got to be able
quick.
To take it in. It has to be not a lot of information, but it needs to be enough to get them to remember it and to hopefully buy a ticket.
Sure.
You know? So, but realistically, so what I did for 5 years was just make thumbnails. You know what I mean?
It's super interesting. So there, yeah, because I've thought about this before with you, especially is there's like the Malcolm Gladwell book called Outliers, which tells like the story of like how and why the Beatles were such good performers. Mm-hmm. And it's because they put in this like 10,000 hour rule.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they went and they were playing at these like nightclubs for like these ridiculously long shows, like overnight shows. And so they just got really, really, really good at performing and being lively for a really long time.
Right.
And I feel like when you were working there and as it translates now, I would be willing to like go out on a limb. And of course I'm somewhat biased because it's our own office, but I would have to imagine that you are in the top 1% of people who can make compelling thumbnails in all of YouTube.
Oh, thank you.
And I feel like to say top 1%, that's like, you know, that feels like still there are plenty of people who are good at it, but I think you are right there with the best.
Oh, thanks.
And I've always sort of been like, man, you know, like if it wasn't for the fact that Jay had spent all this time figuring out how to translate a small amount of information into like a like an image like that.
Right.
What would our channel be like? Because so much of what makes a video clickable is the thumbnail.
Oh yeah. I mean that a good thumbnail will change, you know, the view count by hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Know? Yeah.
And so no, that's always been like our small, you know, touch into this idea of, you know, that 10,000 hour rule, like something you got really strangely good at in a way that translated to what we do now that like has a ripple effect that's unfathomable.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it was interesting going through my like thumbnail progression for the channel, because right when you start, you're like, the idea, like, well, the way we did it was we'd come in from work and write a video and then shoot a video and then edit a video and then like upload it and whatever, like all of it in one night.
Right.
And it was, you know, really a lot of work.
Yes.
And the last thing you wanted to do after what felt like you were finished was make a thumbnail.
Oh, yeah.
And so often you just click, you know, YouTube will offer you 3 random screenshots from your video. And it'd just be like, that one.
I'm not blinking in this one.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just us talking about random stuff anyway.
Yes.
So it didn't seem like a thumbnail, you know, how is this going to make a big difference to it?
Yeah.
And from the kind of channel we were running at the time, you know, it seemed like you wanted people to be interested in you. So you wanted you to be in the thumbnail.
Right.
And as time went on, it was such a weird progression of like, okay, just me in the thumbnail. That's like the lowest form.
Sure.
If it's me with a text, that's a little bit better. If it's me with a picture of a popular character, still better. If it is just a popular character, man, look at that. Much better. Popular character with text? Hey, the further you get from me being in the thumbnail, the much better the video would do. And right. It's just sort of like, it's like a little discouraging because you're like, man, I've put a lot of time and effort into trying to build this image and just, wow. Yeah.
Right. Like you think you not, like, and I remember thinking that like it, the idea in the beginning was almost like us being in the thumbnail would be the pull.
Right.
You know, like I remember thinking it's kind of like, oh, okay. You know, like this person looks interesting. Click. Yeah. And it's like, no, not true at all.
No.
And I mean, this was such a thing that I think for me, I felt like very much represented how little I fully understood it. Cause I mean, you were using thumbnails long before I ever did.
Mm-hmm. I also had just, you know, the software on my computer and I don't know if you did.
No,
I don't
yeah.
even if you'd ever opened Photoshop.
I think I have opened Photoshop in my entire life 3 times.
Mm. Okay.
And all of cool. those 3 times, I feel like I got stuck on an eyedropper and can never really make anything else work.
It is weird because...
Why is the eyedropper, why that?
I don't know. I don't know why you get stuck on that. But I do remember my first class that I ever had to use Photoshop in. It was like, what was the name of the class? I don't remember the name of the class. It was media something. I don't know. But I remember that it was just going through real basic stuff like that. And I would consistently get stuck with like a problem. And I couldn't figure out like what was wrong, and there's like 1,000 little hurdles you have to like get around in Photoshop,
right?
That again, when you're just using it every day, you just get used to all the little hurdles and you eventually can narrow in on what the problem is every single time,
right?
Where you just stop making all the mistakes or running into them or have the settings such that you got it figured out. Because I would get, you know, called in by my boss sometimes and be like, what, I'm trying to do this thing in Photoshop, and it'd be like, oh, this super duper simple thing, you mean you just press that button, cool, done.
Right. Yeah. But those are always the good moments too, because like, look how smart I am. I'm like, I solved your problem so quickly.
That's right. I seem so impressive.
Right. Yeah. See, me, on the other hand, I was always using Preview, which is like if you download an image on like your desktop on a Mac and you click it, it opens with Preview.
Right.
And so I feel like my whole version of it was like, okay, like I figured out what transparent files were, like PNGs.
Oh, yes.
And so it was kind of like, oh, I see. Okay, so if I find a PNG, then I can put that on top of the image of myself.
Yeah.
And kind of sort of have a little bit
there you go.
Of a thumbnail.
A little more interactivity.
But that's literally, so I was not using Final Cut Pro or Adobe Premiere. I was using iMovie, and I was not using Photoshop or any type of photo editing software. I was using Preview.
Yeah.
And that was like the extent of my know-how in that particular area of the, you know, creating process, I guess.
Yeah.
But then there's always been, to this day, this like strange thing where I'm sure that people who know me as someone who makes, you know, content for the internet,
yeah,
there is the assumption that these are things that like base knowledge I would know how to do. And I feel like every other YouTuber and creator who has come to our office and spent time with us here knows how to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had you. And so it's like, I've like, to this day, still, this is not like an area like where I've been able to develop a skill set that I can have in my toolbox, because at this point in time, it feels like you've spent so much time doing it that like the distance between me not knowing how to get off the eyedropper and getting to the point where I'm in the top 1% of thumbnail creators on the platform is quite a distance.
It might be. But on the other hand, there's stuff that you do, like you handle a lot of like the brands and stuff we work with and all the various people in the industry that I am not as good at dealing with stuff like that.
I think that the balance of our skill sets play very nicely with each other.
I think so.
I've also thought before, the fact that we are a duo of people is something that I think helps keep sanity for someone who is in this particular line of business in a way that I have seen, like, you know, fellow creators and stuff who might be like going through like a hard time, or their channel like maybe have like taken a dip in, you know, popularity for whatever reason, algorithm even.
Yeah.
And I feel like having the other person is always like a really good like balancing position, you know, or like someone else to have like with you.
Yeah.
So that you don't feel like the whole world is crashing in on you.
Right.
And I've also always found that like whenever you have a partnership, it's like if one person freaks out, it's strange, but it seems like the other other person is almost like gains confidence by the other person freaking out. It's like, oh, it's my turn to step up and make sure they know.
Right.
Like, we're okay. Like, don't worry. Like, I got your back.
We're good.
And yeah, so it's sort of, it never seems like both partners are ever down on the same day.
Right.
Which is extremely helpful, I think, towards keeping sanity in a world where, you know, you've gone through all these ebbs and flows and growth stages of the channel, and you try not to like look at each of the individual like numbers or moments or likes or views or comments. Yeah. And like, wow, it's not as many as it used to be. Or
yeah, well, that's another thing I feel like when you're going on YouTube, when you're starting out, that you really have to like mentally practice and tell yourself is, you know, it's easy, I think, early on for, I think, you know, maybe let's just use like maybe the first 2 months of us doing it as an example, where you're brand new to it. And because you're doing it every single day, basically after 2 months, you are 1,000% better at everything than you were. Maybe you're not even good at it, but you know, you're way, way, way better.
Right.
You were better. Yeah. Not good, but better.
Right.
And you know, maybe every single video has gotten a little more views because every single video is basically down to literally the number of subscribers you've gotten, and you've picked up 20 new ones in the past 2 months, and it's like, look at this, it's great. And then suddenly you'll have a video and the views are just like lower. And you're like, oh my God, that's it. I've lost it.
It's
everything is, it was all for naught.
Right.
And it's a pill you have to swallow over and over before I think you get used to it. But it's like every new video is not going to be your next
best video.
Hit.
Yeah.
Your next best video.
Well, and to that tune, I feel like there's almost even something like where I would say in the early stages of any new project we've ever created, there have always been this period of time where the information can only bring me positivity. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like if it's a new venture that we're doing, or it's a new channel or an offshoot, or, you know, whatever the case may be. It's kind of like right now I don't rely on the success of this at all. So any success feels like a fun win.
Right.
Like, oh, how cool.
Yeah.
You know, but like any loss, it's sort of like, ah, it's a new project. Like we're still,
whatever.
It's like, you know, we don't rely on it. It's okay. Like, you know, my livelihood's not at stake if, you know, this gaming video that we attempted wasn't popular.
Right.
You know, and like that's okay.
We unboxed the box of Pokemon cards. Yeah, whatever.
That was a fun day for us anyway.
It was a fun day.
Right, yeah. But I think the big challenge, and that's, I think, even when we both had jobs and Super Carlin Brothers started like getting like a little bit more traction, and it was like, okay, like, you know, we can like take like a paycheck from it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of cool. Like it buffers our life a little bit, you know. It's kind of like getting a raise because we've already been putting the effort into it, but now it's like gotten to the point where it's making enough that, you know, there's something to take away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But you haven't quit your day job yet.
Right.
So it's like, no matter what, that is
all bonus.
Right. It's all bonus until you reach that point where it's like, okay, we can do this full time. And as soon as you go full time with it, then it's like, now it's not all bonus anymore.
Right.
Now you rely on it.
Right.
And you can see very easily how for a creator, if they've had like a super high month and then it's a super low month, it can be very difficult to roll with those punches.
It just totally can. And if you feel like everything's imploding around you all of a sudden, even if it's not, if that's your perception and that's your reality, and that affects your creative process, and then you turn out, you know, less enjoyable content or something, like, oh, it's just a bad snowball. It's like, I very much understand how and why people get burnt out on YouTube.
Yes.
In particular, like why the burnout rate is very high, because if it's all on you and everything about your entire livelihood and future and ability to survive in the world depends on your ability to be fun and creative and lively and entertaining and constantly produce it, that's hard.
It is hard, and it kind of goes back to like what we've said earlier, you know, like where I feel like there have been these moments in my life where it has felt like, oh my gosh, like, you know, maybe this is the beginning of the end, you know, whatever the case may be. And you go back to that idea of like, you know, like, I don't want to bring up the fact that I'm a YouTuber because it like, it monopolizes the conversation and then it feels like it's all about me. And then you kind of get the sense of, I've had this fear before, like, am I totally taking it for granted? Like, maybe it's one of these things where what if 10 years from now I'm working, you know, at a desk job because it all fizzled out, people stopped being interested in fandoms in the way that they are, the nostalgia era came to an end or something.
Right.
And you might look back on it and be like, man, there was a period of time where I didn't want to bring up the fact that I was a YouTuber because it was taking up too much. And now I can't get people interested in what I do at all, regardless of how interesting I try to make it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you're like, I so took it for granted.
I should have
just been interesting when I was interesting.
Well, I feel like at that point, it'd be interesting if that happened to you. I bet at that point, you would also have a hard time bringing up that you were a YouTuber.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It would probably feel, I don't know, I don't want to think about it.
It's making me sad.
Making me, yeah. Hopefully we can just continue to make this this whole thing work.
That's the goal.
We love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Check out our Patreon.
great time for a Patreon plug. Oh, absolutely. My gosh.
J-host. Jazzy J. Anyway, what? What you say?
Do not bring in Jazzy. Don't bring Jazzy J into this.
Jazzy J
is the most compelling thing. It's like, I was like, okay. Like, I have an opportunity here to be the one true host. Then you invented Jazzy J 10 years ago, apparently.
That's right.
And now I'm like, I'm mega intimidated. And
There he is. Oh, man.
Okay, so I want to shift gears here a little bit, because we've been talking all sorts of...
We have been talking shop for a bit.
We have gotten some really spectacular feedback to a variety of the different questions that we've asked over the past episodes.
Fire away.
So I want to tell you about some of the feedback that we've gotten, because I also want people to continue to send in feedback, because it is a total joy reading
it
through
is.
All these stories.
I'm just like sliding through the Reddit, and it's making me laugh so much.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I want to, one of the stories that somebody sent to us, and this resonated with me because it seemed like the type of thing that we would do, but it was a moment where somebody thought they were cool.
Oh boy.
And maybe like the perception wasn't that.
Okay.
So this is from Adam. So one time he thought he was cool. He was, he started dating a girl while they were in college, and he was trying to impress her at a party they were attending. And, while there, they had a couple of, you know, libations.
Mm.
A couple sippers. He said that he noticed that the host's main light over the stairs was burnt out.
Right.
And he was like, we can't have that.
Can't have
it. And so this is like a light that's like 15 to 20 feet, like over a stairwell.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can imagine, it's almost like boxed in. So if you could like spread your arms out, you could like shimmy up the wall.
Yeah.
So Adam does exactly that in an effort to impress this new girlfriend.
Right.
And he's like, well, I'm going to shimmy up the wall. I'm going to change the light bulb for this host. So he's like, I'm going to go for it. Starts shimmying up the wall. Gets up there successfully. Maybe doesn't know going into it that he will get up there successfully, because he doesn't bring the light bulb with him.
Oh, that's a problem.
So now he's at the party. He's up the wall, sort of like spidered up there, you know? And he's like, host, could you get a light bulb? So like the host is like frantically running around, because this guy's like, you know, mounted up on the wall up there.
Spider-Manning. Yeah.
So comes, guy throws the light bulb up, gets it. Yeah, I know, right? Don't throw a glass. gets it, swaps it out. He takes the old light bulb, tosses it down to his new, you know, person that he's dating.
Yeah.
They catch it. He comes down from the wall like a total champion of champions. And it turns out almost everybody at the party just kind of thought that he was being a little bit reckless.
Mm.
And that it wasn't like this super cool thing that he was able to.
It was just like, look at this guy seeking attention.
I know, right? Yeah. But in the end, he ended up marrying the girl.
Wow. So jokes on the rest of the people at that party.
Jokes on the rest of the people at that party, because if he had not done that, there's a small chance, talking about all things happening for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's one of those things. If he hadn't climbed that wall. But that totally, to me, seemed like the type of thing that me and you and the GMA would do at parties, where we would potentially like climb a rock wall or something, and everybody would think that it was... We would think that everybody would think it was cool, but in reality, a lot of people would be like, man, someone's going to get hurt, and it's going to ruin the rest of the night, and they're jeopardizing everything by climbing this rock wall. Actually, do you remember a time? I think it was at the very first VidCon we ever went to.
Yeah.
We were out with a whole bunch of our other, you know, creator friends.
Yes.
Content creator, influencer friends, whatever I call these people.
Oh God.
They're other humans.
Con squad.
Huh?
Con squad.
Con squad. Yeah, yeah. Con squad.
Yeah.
And this was like right at the peak of like my rock climbing career. And I remember we were like outside of like a chain restaurant that had like this rock facade wall.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked up to it, and I don't know if someone was like, Ben, can you climb that? And I was like,
sure can.
Absolutely, I can climb it. And I was like, so, you know, I start climbing up the wall. Before I know it, I'm like, you know, 12 feet in the air, to the point where it's kind of like not really that impressive or that big of a deal. But it's also the type of thing where if I fell, I would probably get hurt.
Yeah.
And so I start like shimmying my way down. Everybody, actually, I think people were impressed. I'm going to go with they were impressed. But I jumped down from like 6 feet up.
Oh, higher than...
Higher than like
should have.
Expected.
Higher
and I remember,
than 28-year-old knees can handle.
Right. Yeah. So everyone's like, you know, like, whoa, that was so cool. And I remember hitting the ground. Yeah. And my knees and my ankles just like seizing and being like, oh my God, that hurts so bad. bad.
Yeah.
But everybody's like so impressed, and I'm just sort of like,
shake yeah, it off.
No big deal. It's what you do when you're a climber, you know?
That's funny. It's interesting to me that it does sound like the kind of thing we would end up getting into at some sort of party with our friends in like high school or college or something. But I don't feel like I would have ever been doing it with the intent of impressing people.
Maybe not with the intent of impressing people so much as feeling like we were cool by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
As well as just the general challenge of the thing.
Right.
Yeah, I think we were all very competitive with one another. So if one person could do it, John, then the rest of us had to do it.
Had to try to do it too. Yes. Although, I don't want to throw John under the bus, but he would make you do it first to judge whether or not he thought he could beat
you. Can do it. Yeah. Yeah. Make sure you can do it, watch you do it, and then do it better than you.
Exactly.
Do. Yeah.
Classic John. Yeah. Classic John. Sorry to throw you under the bus, buddy.
Yeah.
We love you.
Oh, okay. Another piece of feedback that I thought was particularly interesting. So we were talking just a little bit about Tiger King, which I have not watched. But the person who wrote this, her name is Irin, E-I-R-I-N.
Okay.
Who lives in Norway.
Okay.
And she said that her and her family recently started watching Tiger King and thought that it was so unusual that these practices were normal in the United States.
Not normal.
And had no idea how something like that could be regulated. And it wasn't until she listened to the pop that she realized that even for Americans, this behavior is completely shocking.
It is completely shocking.
Like, so, but I thought that was super interesting because this is like one of those things where I feel like somehow, some way, shape, or form to people outside of the United States looking at this, it feels like an American thing, like where you were like viewing Tiger King as if this is sort of like maybe they're extreme within the context of owning tigers,
mm-hmm.
but like other than that, like for an American, it might be a totally typical thing to own a tiger. And
right.
I was like, it is so interesting to me how if like your perception of another country, if you have such a limited amount of information that is so like striking or odd,
mm-hmm.
it could color your perception of that entire, you know, region of the world.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, like.
Because of the nationality or the like the place.
Right. Like you like
who's taking, you like you associate that with the activity
right.
as much as anything else.
Right.
When perhaps that's not really part of it.
Exactly. Yeah. So like you might think like, oh, totally normal thing for Americans to do, to own tigers. What a weird thing. No one here would own a tiger.
Yeah. Like like if we'd been watching, like if Tiger King happened to be about a guy in Norway.
Right.
We'd all be like, man, I didn't realize people in Norway own tigers. Like that guy's crazy, but yeah.
Yeah. Like you would, like maybe you would start to associate Norwegians with tigers.
Right.
Like as a result of that particular association, which is like not at all
not
the case.
True.
I don't, the only tiger that I'm aware of to ever have been in Roanoke is Ruby the tiger, which used to live at Mill Mountain Zoo.
Do you know watching Tiger King made me like really wonder if Ruby the tiger, who used to live at Mill Mountain Zoo, came from one of these people on the show?
Okay, so did Dad not post a picture with a tiger and one of the people that show?
Yeah, our dad in his reporting career has come into contact with at least not Joe Exotic, Tiger King guy, but one of the other people, Doc, if you've seen the show, you know who it is. The guy from South Carolina.
Okay.
Who has a very similar type compound and stuff. But it sounded like the way they were talking about on the show, like, it's like illegal to sell these tigers and stuff, but zoos are also like, hey, free tiger or whatever. Or like,
oh,
really,
interesting.
You know,
interesting.
Stuff. So I don't know. It's also just like what counts as a zoo, you know? Like, I feel like proper official run zoos that are funded by like city and state probably are following all the rules.
Yeah, well, with my aquarium workings, there is something that you can apply for that is AZA certification,
mm-hmm.
or accreditation, which is like the American Zoological Association, something like that. And I remember as we were building out my big aquarium system at the local museum here, which is not AZA accredited. It's interesting because the like restrictions and rules and stuff are very, very specific. So like all of my countertops and like my workshop down there are made like I built them. They're out of like, you know, plywood and 2x4s and like lumber and stuff. In order to be AZA accredited, like all the surfaces in your workspace have to be like stainless steel.
Oh.
And so there are certain elements like of what it would be required to be a proper recognized zoo.
Okay.
That would be regulated. And if you failed to meet up, you know,
right,
to those regulations, you could have it revoked and therefore all the license that comes with it also taken away.
Sure. Interesting. Yes. Interesting. Don't know enough about tiger zoo licensing, I suppose.
Yeah. I would say the only reason I'm even remotely a savvy, it has nothing even to do with the aquarium stuff, but at one point in time, we were featuring an endangered species at Center in the Square in one of our exhibits. And because of that, we had to get a whole bunch of accreditation in place in order to be allowed to do it in the first place.
Right.
And to go and collect that particular fish.
Okay.
So that's why I've been semi-informed.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Ben Carlin. Owner of endangered species. Not really.
Oh, yeah, careful. Not really.
Once cared for.
Once cared for.
Yes.
An endangered species owned by someone else.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yep. There we go.
All right. Bravo.
Thanks.
Bravo. Any more feedback we need to touch on?
No, I think that's everything. We could close out with a corny joke really quick, though, because I believe that we completely forgot.
Totally blew past the corny joke. Fire away.
Okay. Do you know why I hate Russian dolls?
Why do you hate Russian dolls?
They're so full of themselves.
Oh!
Get in those like little balls.
Because they all stack into each other.
Yeah. Okay, what do you give a sick lemon?
Lime off.
That was an interesting guess.
Like time off.
Oh, I see. Lime off. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. It's lemonade.
Oh, that's better.
That's better.
That's better. Okay, sure. I was like, citrus pun?
very close. Very close.
Okay. Here we go.
J Dad Jokes Carlin.
That's me.
There you go. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of The Pop. If you would like to support us over on Patreon, you can do so by going to patreon.com/popcornculture, where we have three different tiers, all of which determine who is the one true host of the episode. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what I'm going to... I feel like the day that you eventually surpass me and...
what a day
and
it's going to be.
You say the words, what's popping, everybody?
What's
hello,
poppin'?
Oh my gosh, it's going to hurt my heart.
Oh, it's going to be great.
This is why I need people to continue to hold my status. But as we said earlier, all success we see as joint success. So any which way you guys decide to choose, we do appreciate any support. And the show will be free no matter what, all the time and always.
That's right.
Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.